Welcome to the SBS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, my website, beardedtechedguy.com, and of course on the My SBS page for digital learning. Now, I'm excited to bring you this series of podcasts, one I've been looking forward to for a couple of years now, and that is on gamification and game-based learning within the classroom. Throughout this series, I'm going to be referencing a book called Power Up Your Classroom, Reimagining Learning Through Gameplay by Lindsay Blass and Kate Tolney. And in fact, the first episode of this series is going to kind of be on their history and my history with games and gaming and game-based learning. So before we jump into that, though, I want to make sure that I cover any and all updates that we have going on here in the district. So for you MySPS employees, make sure that you're checking out the MySPS site where all of the updated announcements are. I encourage you to go out there and check and see if there's anything that would be of relevance to you. On the digital learning page and on my personal blog, we have a number of blog posts going up all about Microsoft Office and their tools in the classroom. And so I encourage you to check that out. Depending on when you're listening to this, there may be more than just the first part, but it is a three-part series that is going up. There will be corresponding blog posts also on what we're talking about today and going forward with the podcast, which is using gamification and game-based learning in your classroom. Also, I just want to make sure that you are aware we are in January. I know it is 2024, but our school year started in 2023, and that is why we have the 23 tools for 2023. You can check it out on the digital learning page. You can also find it in the show notes here, the direct link to the challenges. I encourage you to take part. We do have a scoreboard going, and there are prizes going out to those who are participating. With the challenges that we have, I want to make sure that you get credit for the things you're doing in the classroom already. I know you're doing them because they are efficient or fun or all of the above there, but I want to make sure that you can get some badges, get some points, maybe even win some prizes, and then have some things that you can add to your seeds to show your professional development. So I'm excited for the 23 tools. There is a leaderboard out there. There are challengers happening right now. I even encourage you, if you're listening and you're a leader at your school, to maybe even challenge your school to be the number one school in the district. Our scoreboard has the ability to check out not just people, but also school and zone levels. Make sure that you are keeping an eye out, submit, and maybe you too will win prizes. So now we're going to jump into our series on game-based learning. And through that, we're calling it Powering Up Your Classroom. So this week, we're starting out our book study, Power Up Your Classroom by Lindsay Blass and Kate Tolney. Hopefully you have a copy of the book. I've got mine. If you don't have a copy, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. I don't have an affiliate store, so I don't get any credit for you buying this book, but you should get it because there's a lot of great useful things. I have highlights and notes all over mine, and I'm sure you will too as you read through it. And as we go about studying this book, one of the things that we're working on this year is leveling up. See what I did there? Nice little pun action for you. Oh, action, another fun word that goes along with gaming. So we're working on leveling up our knowledge to gamification and game-based learning, hoping that we can test out a few things this year by the end of the school year to help us dive in and go full force at the beginning of next year. Most of the time, I know me personally, I skip introductions to books. I'm not sure why. I've always just jumped to chapter one. I always feel like introductions and acknowledgements kind of are the same thing. I did not do that this time, though, with this book, and I am so glad that I didn't. Instead of starting with chapter one, we're going to start with the introductions to the book. The main points of the introduction is to set the table for the rest of the book, giving us some terms to start with and introducing the idea that each section will be called levels. It's a gaming term. Am I right? Another important function of the introduction is to start with the why, something I wholeheartedly agree with. In Simon Sinek's TED Talk, Start With Why, he discusses the idea that we get to get people to buy into our visions And to do that, we need to have a solid why. Like, why are we doing this? What is our purpose? That comes afterwards. But if we want them to be hook, line, and sinker in, we need to get our why out there. People are willing to follow someone with a clear vision and purpose. And with that, we'll be more readily able to take in what we're hearing and be able to apply it. If you've never heard his TED Talk, I'm posting it also in the show notes. He is fantastic and one of my inspirations for everything that I do, because I do believe that we need to start with our why. In the introduction, our fearless authors pool together their knowledge and discovered a few different trends when it comes to gaming, gamification, and classroom engagement. And so I'm going to try to summarize those little points here. One is when students don't connect with what they are learning, they disengage. I don't know about you, but I definitely check out if I'm not interested and I don't connect to why I'm doing something. Look at that, going back to that why again. Another thing that they point out in this introduction is that something that we all struggle with and deal with, and that's this idea of failure. We are always acting out of a fear of failure. It might not be obvious, it might not be consistent or persistent, but we all act out of a feel of failure. It is a complete and real thing for all of us. One of the other points that they make is that educators need help to create a culture that celebrates failure as a learning opportunity. It's so hard when we are in a space where when you fail, it's looked down upon instead of celebrated. Because as we know, failure is the first step in learning how to do the right thing. It might take us a long time. I mean, there's always that old adage out there about Edison making 200 different attempts at a light bulb, or 100, depending on who you read, is what they'll tell you, is that he didn't fail 100 times or 200 times or whatever the quote actually is, but he found 100 or 200 ways to not make a light bulb. That's a completely different mindset there. The idea that failure is just a learning opportunity. And I know that when I taught, I needed help with that, especially early on when I was teaching, because I had never really thought of it that way. And then failure-rich classrooms show a higher level of engagement in their learning. I know it might sound counterintuitive, but if you have a space where it is positive and positivity reigns supreme, and even in failures, we're able to look at and grow from, then we are going to have much higher levels of engagement in that classroom because students will be invested. And I think some of these things we're going to come back to in later weeks as we talk about the book and different levels within the book. And so from this, they adopted the ideas of, I believe they call it living in beta. I know it's a little awkward to flip back and forth in pages and books. So I'm trying to do a lot of this from memory here. I might come back to it at the end and correct myself. But this idea of living in beta is really best summarized from a 2013 TEDx talk by Molly Bennett, where she discusses one of the goals of a teacher is to get students from point A to point B. The problem with this thinking is that if you have 25 students, you have 25 different point A's. It can become difficult getting every student to move. So her thoughts are to move the classroom environment in beta mode. Similarly, in the way that Google operates, Google is never afraid of making a mistake or deciding that something doesn't work. They have a culture that celebrates failures. In her talk, she mentions one way that the public gets to see this is through the Google graveyard. There's going to be a link in the show notes about this, where the lives of products are celebrated when they pass. The Google graveyard is really funny to look at because you're like, I know when I was looking through, I was like, oh, I thought that product would be here forever. And in fact, as I'm making this podcast, one of the things that's going away that all of us educators really like from Google is the Jamboard. The Jamboard is making their way to the Google graveyard. So when thinking about living in beta, there's a few game connections which really encourages us to persevere, which includes multiple lives, feedback, and the higher purpose of playing the game. Each of these things are part of game mastery. I can't tell you how many times I died trying to beat Rainbow Six Vegas 2 on my Xbox 360. Well, it was a lot. It's a pretty good first shooter game where I just kept you know, biting the dust while trying to make it through, because I don't believe on easy settings. Every time I got knocked down, though, I respond and tried again. I also had an endless feedback loop that showed me how I was getting better, things to try, and things to work on. Especially in connecting again with this Rainbow Six game, when you respond, not only were you trying to do whatever you were doing differently, the computer also tries to not do the same thing every time. So you're constantly trying to improve as you're going. But I'll tell you what, I sat there for hours trying to beat that game. And by hours, I mean days. And by days, I'm thankful that I didn't sit in front of my screen every day for hours on end, or else I never would have become an educator. We'd never be here in the first place because I'd be still stuck in the game. But as you can tell, I am not. And the game is much, much older, and I have beaten it beyond repair. And this is true with most games. There are small steps throughout the game that help you get to the end. You don't just start playing and then reach your goal. There are a number of small steps along the way that prepare you for your higher purpose. Also, again, thinking through the games that I love and love playing, Star Wars Fallen Jedi is another one of those games which has a lot of little things that help you along the way until you can get to the boss at the end so you can defeat it. So that is the first part of the introduction. The second part that really comes through, and I'm going to share what I call their stories and then my story when it comes to gaming. And this is pretty exciting to share. You might ask, wait a minute, are you a part of the book? And I would challenge that question and say that we are all part of the story. We all have an origin story about the effects of gaming culture in our lives. Both Lindsay and Kate share their story and their journey through games in their lives. And I'm not going to sit here and rehash the whole thing because you should get the book and you should read it. But I'm going to point out a few of the things that I really enjoyed hearing from them in their stories. I'm going to jump to Lindsay first. In the introduction, Lindsay discusses one moment in her life. Despite the literal world falling down around her, she lived in California. You know, earthquakes destroy things. Happens often. Where she had to save her Nintendo game first before getting to safety. I'd be willing to bet that she would have continued to play if her TV wasn't smashed by falling debris. Just a hunch. As a teacher, she longed for her students to have that desire to surge forward like she did, to pause her game. Really cool story from Lindsay. One of the stories from Kate that I really liked was that she was into any kind of game that she could get her hands on. From volleyball, well, I'm not as much into volleyball, but I did play other sports like baseball, football, to things like Pogs, which I don't know about you, but I had those things too. And I was the boss with my Master Pog. I think it's called a Master Pog. I don't know. It was the big heavy one where you smash them all. She also enjoyed jigsaw puzzles. Everything was a challenge where she could learn something about herself, and she loved the competition of it all and wanted her students to grow in the same way that she did. Both felt like their students needed to have interactions with their learning throughout their teaching career. They continued to develop best practices regarding moving beyond traditional classrooms like work, like tests, essays, worksheets, to more student-centered practices. That's something else that you'll really find throughout the book is that it's more based on student-centered versus product-centered. This led them to working together and developing their practices in the book that we're all reading together. So those are just a couple of highlights from their story. But like I mentioned, I want to include myself in this because, well, I am, of course, the host of this podcast and I do enjoy talking about myself, and so I'm going to give a little bit of my story of gaming, which I'll continue talking about throughout the series of episodes for this podcast. So I think this introduction really encouraged me to think about my own gaming story. My earliest memories of gameplay was when I was 7 years old, and there's even a picture of this somewhere, of me sitting around a table playing the most 80s game of all, D&D. For those of you who don't know D&D, it stands for Dungeons and Dragons. And no, I'm not talking about the movie, although I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to watching it at some point. That night, and hopefully if I find a picture of it, I'm going to include it in the blog post version of this podcast, because it was an epic night where I drank a lot of Mountain Dew to help me stay up till 3 in the morning because I was a level 10 ranger and I wanted to reach level 13, and the game must go on. Those games, by the way, Dungeons & Dragons, if you ever play them, they can go on for hours and hours and days. It was at this point I must have realized that no matter what, I loved playing games. Whether it was playing baseball, board games, or video games, I was always wanting to be the best. I mean, that still rings true today. In everything I do, I have a desire to do it better than anyone else around me. Some of my other earliest memories of video game time was when we got the original Super Nintendo with Super Mario Bros. 3, the greatest game of all time until GoldenEye came out. But we all have a history with games and gaming, whether it is physical active games, whether it is board games, whether, like Kate, it's jigsaw puzzles. As a teacher, I really had a desire to work games and teaching into my classroom. Some of my most inspired times were, and vivid memories of gaming when I was a student, involved role-playing where I was in fifth grade. And since I taught fifth grade, I really looked for this curriculum and I could never find it. I was part of a city-state of Rome because we were studying Roman and Greek history. I was part of Sparta. Go Sparta! And in order to progress, we had to learn all about Greek history and Roman history throughout various games, and they were all connected back to standards, skills, and subjects that we were working on. All the math was connected back to Greek times. Any books we were reading in English, all of our writing, it was all connected, which is something that I wish I would have done when I taught, or would have been better about trying to do in connecting it all together instead of all these standalone curriculums where it's one thing and then another thing. This is where, again, student-centered learning comes in, because if everything is connected, then students are going to be more engaged. And this idea of game-based learning stuck with me throughout the rest of my school and through my undergrad. I can even think about and think through that we had to demonstrate some of our learning, and we had to do it in front of the whole school, so we had a fifth grade play where we acted out different mythology stories. I, of course, being young and brash and excitable, had to play Hercules, because who wouldn't want to be Hercules? Until I learned that while I loved playing Hercules, once I learned what I had to wear, I was like, oh, so I get to walk around school without a shirt on? Sweet. You know, fifth graders, what can you say? And so I say all of this to say, once I began teaching, I was overwhelmed with all my responsibilities. In many ways, college in Vermont didn't prepare me to be a teacher in Springfield, Mass. New state meant new standards, and all my dreams of creating a game-based classroom sat dormant for a long time. And as we went on and I regained my footing in the classroom, I experimented with using games for teaching various skills within my class. I realized that for the games to mean something, I had to connect them to what we were learning through the unit plan, or the games needed to reach the students and the needs that they have. In many ways, I think I would be a different teacher today than I was then with the knowledge that I have gained now. And if you follow that logic, fantastic. Maybe I'll even have a little diagram to explain that in the blog version of this episode. Near the end of my time as teaching in the classroom, though, I definitely experimented with game-based learning, with using tools like Liberty, the American Revolution from PBS, Mission US for Crown or for Colony, and iCivics. If I had continued teaching and didn't take on the awesome position that I love now, my next foray would have been working on connecting all the curriculum together to create the experience instead of having these separate but equal tools on the outside. So what's your experience with game-based learning? What's your experience with gaming and game culture? Were you an athlete? Were you big into board games? If you're my age, did you play D&D? Do you even play D&D now? I can go to Barnes & Noble and collect whole D&D activities. I don't know about you, but I'm probably going to go after this and go play my Hogwarts Legacy game, which is a lot of fun. So there you have it. We've made it through the introduction. In the coming weeks, we'll move on to level one, or chapter one, if you already forgot from the beginning of this episode. And I can't wait to share with you what I've learned. And like I was asking a moment ago, I'd love to hear your gaming stories today. So please share it in the comments below. if you are posting on the Bearded Tech Ed or the MySPS page for this blog episode. I am going to have corresponding blog posts, which are going to be similar. I'm not going to just sit there and transcript everything I've said. Some of it will be same, some of it will be similar. Probably all make a lot more sense through writing instead of my meandering ways with talking. And so again, the book that we're going to be doing, it's called Power Up Your Classroom, Reimagine Learning Through Gameplay by Lindsay Blass and Kate Tolney. It's an ISTE book, and I encourage you to get a copy of it. So by the time we hit level one, you'll be ready to go with following along and even have the ability to ask questions in the comments below. So thanks for joining us today. If you liked this episode of the SPS Digital Learning Hour, please go out to your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a rating and review. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. Make sure that you go to those two places in particular, because we want to be able to share all the different things going on here in Springfield, along with any of the ideas that we have as educators. I love doing what I'm doing, and I encourage you to help us out and share the word. Make sure you even send it to a colleague who you think might be interested in game-based learning and not knowing where to start. The whole purpose of this series is to help us be prepared to start. And I think no better time than the middle of the year to learn something so that we can plan on the first day of school to be able to implement game-based learning and gamification in your classroom. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour.